I wanted to talk about is just in terms of what you're currently doing now, during the lockdown. How are you navigating your working style, especially with clients that you used to interact with on a daily basis or physically? So how are you navigating, you know, now during this pandemic?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that because of the nature of a pandemic, it's impacting on all of us at the same time. And so it has, in a way, made it easier to get clients and different stakeholders to understand that the nature of our interactions will have to, you know, evolve to be able to adapt to the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, even with, you know, the clients that I do work with, they have had to also work differently, you know, because we all have to be home. We all have to rely a lot more on technology and being able to connect remotely. The things that have really stood out for me during this time have been, for instance, and this is my own experience, but also other people have shared the same type of, I guess, feedback or frustrations.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, working from home has kind of, for some people, for some clients or some employers, it has given the impression that they can access you at any time of day or night because you're home anyway. And you know, so I'm finding that there's a definite need to for all of us to be able to find ways to create those boundaries or to reinforce those boundaries, to say to people, even though I'm working at home, I still have work time and non-work time. But also, we don't have access to the services that we usually do within our homes.
Yeah.
So for instance, if you have a helper, right now, the likelihood is that you don't have a helper coming in at the moment. So you've got to do your own cleaning, you've got to do your washing, you've got to take care of your kids, you've got to do schoolwork, you know, because kids are homeschooled at the moment. So there's a lot more responsibilities that are kind of sitting on our laps right now. And I'm finding that because generally organizations are so used to working in one way that they're not adapting to be able to be flexible enough to meet the changed needs of their employees. And so that's a challenge that a lot of people are currently dealing with at the moment, because employers are really just treating it as though it's business as usual when it's really not.
That is actually so true. I never thought of that dynamic. And in terms of, this is just out of bounds, but how do we go, you know, we setting boundaries, obviously that is the key thing, and establishing those lines of these are the times and these are the things that are now incorporated in my time. But how do we then manage the relationship? Because now it's not as easy as me going over to Sihle's office and knocking and saying, listen, how about we talk about this and this, and I'm able to read your body language, I'm able to read your attitude on that day, able to actually look at you in the eye and get a gist of what you actually think. But now this is virtually happening, so certain things are taken away a bit from managing the relationship as we used to. So how do we virtually manage these relationships where I'm not able to read Sihle's mood or attitude or what she actually thinks?
Yeah, so I think it always goes right back to determining how best to manage a one-on-one relationship. Just as you would in the workplace, I think it's important for people to adopt the habit of texting somebody before phoning them and saying to them, you know, are you available to chat now, or would you prefer to do it at a later time? This is what I want to discuss.
Mm.
Or say to somebody, which time of the day works better for you for us to have our Zoom calls or to set up our team meetings?
Yeah.
Because we have to acknowledge the fact that there's a lot going on for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, we're all under, you know, tremendous amounts of pressure because of all of the different things that we're required to do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And we have to stop pretending that people don't have children at home that are running around doing all sorts of things, or children that are demanding our attention at any given moment. And we need to give people the safety of knowing that they can say, actually, I can't have a conversation right now, I'm busy with my kids, and make them know that that's okay.
Yeah.
And for them to say, can we touch base rather in an hour?
Yeah.
I think it's, you find that people's inability to communicate what works better for them is directly related to how safe they feel in the relationship with their line manager or within their organization.
Mm.
It's a direct reflection of the culture of that organization. And so if people are afraid to say, this time doesn't work for me, I prefer this time, then there's something wrong within the organizational culture that the organization actually needs to reflect upon. And I think that also, you know, if organizations are talking about, you know, prioritizing diversity and inclusion, that's not limited to just race and gender and sexual orientation. You need to also understand that there's diversity in our households. So 9 a.m. may be a great time for you in your household because you guys operate in a particular way, but it might be chaos at my home at that particular time. Or maybe I prefer to clean the house at first thing in the morning so that I can think clearly, and maybe I can only then start working around 10:30, 11. We need to start really thinking, asking people what works best for them, and then adapting the way in which we engage and work to be able to suit people's needs. Because at the end of the day, in order for you to be able to get the best out of your employees, you have to be able to understand and empathize with their situations and support them.
Yeah. Have you, in terms of you also speaking about culture there, have you thought of new ways that you can actually teach companies or implement systems of how to let the culture, which usually operated on the premises of the business when everyone was present there, to actually transition and to see it through while we're at home? Do you think that is even possible?
It absolutely is possible. But it also obviously depends on the nature of the business.
Yeah.
I think there's a number of things that come into play when determining how agile a company's culture is, and how easily it can adapt to changing environments and circumstances. You know, if you've got leaders who are open-minded and leaders who are not in denial about the environment that they're operating in and where, you know, what the future of that organization is, then they will be more adaptable to, you know, I guess, amending the way in which the organization operates.
Yeah.
So that's one part of it. The other part of it is organizations generally have, because historically it's always been a, you come to work from 8 to 5 and that's it, and that's just the way we do things because that's how things have been done. I think that this crisis is forcing organizations to really think about whether or not that is the most effective way to get work done and to produce results, because being at the office from 8 to 5 doesn't mean automatically, or you know, equal productivity. And this is an opportunity for us to really think about what is the best way for us to get the best out of our people, but also ensuring that we create an environment for them to be able to work in a style that best suits them. For some people, they might prefer to work at the office because maybe being at home is too chaotic, maybe they've got young kids and they actually need that time away. But I think that there's an opportunity for us to explore how flexible organizations can be in this regard, because, you know, if you can take away the hassle of people being stuck in traffic for 4 hours a day, you know, two hours to work, 2 hours from work. If you can, you know, remove those frictions from people's daily experiences, it creates a different kind of experience for them, you know, and it also helps them to focus more. It takes away the exhaustion or the anxiety that's linked to just the commute every single day. And especially for people who, you know, have to leave home at 5 o'clock in the morning, whether it's because they stay in Pretoria and they're trying to avoid the traffic, or whether it's because they don't have a car and they rely on public transport and, you know, they have to try and get into the queue as early as possible.
Yeah.
We need to start thinking about that if we really want to be able to say that we are building organizations that put people first.
Yes.
You know, we can't just think of flexibility in within the organization as a solution that only benefits people who are already privileged. We need to think about people who are the most marginalized and determine what flexibility is like for them.
Yeah.
Then we can say, now we're being diverse about our approach to people.
Okay. Another thing that I just wanted to ask you, when it comes to Black-owned companies, and yeah, I mean, you've spoken a lot, you know, from me knowing you and following your different platforms, a lot about corporate SA, and, you know, obviously that being male-dominated in certain industries, very white-dominated, mostly, and how the dynamics play out in different situations, and the working environment. But, like, I wanted to also focus on Black-owned companies and just on the culture there. One of the things that I was thinking of is there a specific culture that is different from corporate SA that we are chasing within Black-owned companies? Or is this just, like, a thinking that we just have, that just because we're a different race, we probably have a different way of doing things?
I think, look, obviously, historically, corporate SA has a number of issues and barriers for Black professionals, you know, from discrimination to racism to, you know, cultural discrimination and all sorts of things that we deal with. And then when it comes to Black owned organizations, it gets a little multi-layered for me, because yes, there are certainly Black organizations that, you know, are operating well and that treat their employees well and that have a good and healthy culture, but also there are Black owned businesses where the employees have a very negative experience within that organization because the culture is unhealthy.
Yeah.
And that could be a number of reasons. So the one thing is that culture, firstly, is not something that exists in a vacuum, right? It's created and it's maintained by people. And the people who determine that are the people who obviously make the decisions about what it is going to be and how it is affected within that organization, how it is lived, you know, and how the organization does what it does and how it treats its people. And so if the leaders within that organization don't place a high value on how their employees are treated, how ethically they conduct their business, how supportive and empathetic they are towards their staff, how they invest in developing their staff, all of those things contribute to creating the experience, right? And with each organization, when you are in a position where you are deciding that your organization is ready to employ people and to have a staff complement, one of the things that's important to have is a very clear idea of what your employee value proposition is going to be. So that means that when an employee is, just like you do for customers, when you're going to sell a product, you don't just go out to the market and go, I've got a radio that I'm selling, buy it. Right? You have to go out there and say, I've got this amazing radio. This is what it does. This is how it works. This is what you can do with it. This is why you will enjoy it. This is why you need it.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, after you bought it, there is a warranty for a year. This is your after sales service. If you have any issues, contact us. We'll assist you 24/7. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have that whole value proposition that goes from pre-purchase to post-purchase that is covered.
Yeah.
The same applies for employees. When you're recruiting people, you recruit them on the basis of, we've got, this is what, who our organization is, this is what we do, this is what we're about. We have this position that's available, and we are looking for these sets of skills. And, you know, people then apply, they come for an interview, and then you tell them, this is what our values are, this is what our culture within the organization is. And people, you know, will think, oh, okay, great, so I feel like I might be a nice fit for this organization. Fantastic. They get the job, they come in, and what you told them during the interview is different from what they're actually experiencing. You know, and then there's that dissonance that then happens, because now it's like, okay, but I'm grateful to have this job, and that's great because I have an income, but wow, I hate coming to work every day because I'm treated badly, or this environment is toxic. And organizations don't spend enough time thinking about, when employees are actually in the organizations, how are we enabling them to perform at their, you know, the highest level? How are we supporting them to be able to deliver? How is it that we are ensuring that their experience here is making them feel like they want to give more of themselves, because they feel valued, they feel respected, they feel that they, you know, their contribution is appreciated within the organization, and they're not abused. Because, you know, when people come into an organization, and if it's toxic and they're not treated well, and they're not supported, and they don't have access to opportunities, and they're underpaid, the likelihood is that you will get less and less out of them as time goes on, because they're dealing with the stress, they're dealing with anxiety, they're dealing with the rising cost of living, they're dealing with frustrations, depression, all sorts of things that ultimately impact on their ability to deliver, which then impacts on the organization's ability to then grow and sustainably.
So, you know, there was a live Instagram interview that I was watching of yours, and you read out of, I can't remember, page 200 and something in your book, and literally I started crying, because at that point when you were reading, you were basically speaking about just what you went through in terms of within this workplace, and your thoughts and your feelings and your hurts. And I was just thinking of my personal stories within corporate and the different companies I worked for, and also now having to run my own company and have certain people that I employ, whether that is on a contract basis or some on a full-time basis. And I was just thinking, how do I, firstly, I have to heal from what I've been through, and be very cognizant of not doing the very same things to people that I work with, the team that works within my company. And I just wanted to know, how do we not hire from our hurt places? Because it is so common that, you know, Sihle has been through this, Alan has been through this, Temba has been through this. Then we start our own companies, and you find that some of the things we just literally adopt, and then we do it all over again. Nothing really changes in our approach. We're not really conscious of certain things, or we really have that thing that umsebenzi, like you just continue. So how do we approach it in the sense that black, you know, employers or black, yes, employers do not hire from a point of hurt, and also not transmit that necessarily within the environment.
Yeah, I think that the first the point of departure for me is around firstly acknowledging that you are in a space of hurt, that you are processing trauma, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And it's so important to deal with that. Firstly, to call it what it is, and then to confront it and deal with it. Because as long as we continue to pretend that we're okay, we're fine, without dealing with the things that cause us trauma, it actually exacerbates it. And that's when you then start to see people starting to replicate those negative behaviors onto other people. So I think that's the first thing, is acknowledging that. And then the second thing I think that I find helpful is having accountability partners. So people that you know will be honest with you, that you know will be able to call you out when you're out of line, and you know that you trust their judgment. Because then you can say to them, this situation happened, this is what I said, or this is what I did, what do you think? Or this person has done A, B, C, D, this is what I'm thinking of saying or doing, what do you think, is it appropriate or not? And also just, because that's how you begin to learn to develop a filter for yourself. A filter to start, you know, kind of figuring out, how are you making your decisions? Are you leading with trauma or are you leading with grace? And I think, you know, we have to come back and reflect regularly on ourselves, regularly think about how have people experienced you, you know, on a daily basis in the workplace. How have people walked away feeling after their interactions with you? And I think it's especially important as a leader, as somebody who, you know, who carries a huge responsibility towards other people's careers and livelihoods. I think it's important for us to check ourselves. That's, you know, part of the responsibility of being a leader. But also, I also think that it's so important to create a culture within your organization where your employees can come to you and say, I didn't like that. And you actually listen to what they're saying, and you engage, and you, you know, you focus on resolving those issues in the most amicable way, so that when people walk away from those conversations with you, they still feel safe when coming into the workplace every single day. And they still feel safe and trusting their skills and their livelihoods, you know, upon you and your organization. Because at the end of the day, it always boils down to trust, and whether or not employers and employees can trust each other. And the only way to do that is by being authentic, it's by being honest, and it's by keeping communication open and, you know, as flexible as possible.
And another, you know, disadvantage about, I think, having been through this, sometimes you have a guilt factor that plays in. So let's say you're not necessarily transmitting any negative negative aura into the work environment in terms of you and your workers. Sometimes you hire from a point of, I've been through this, so I'm just gonna hire anybody that needs, you know, work. They have to have a bit of this in terms of the requirement of the job, but you don't necessarily hire the best of the best. And I find it so common amongst, you know, some of the black owned companies I know, that they hired from a point of storytelling leading, instead of actually, this is the job, this is the description, these are the requirements. If you don't meet this, we like literally not hiring you. So how do we like get beyond that, and really hire from a point of performance, instead of feeling guilty that we always constantly have to lift umphakathi and, you know, take this one up? And because sometimes really you don't have the time or the resources to take somebody from a certain ground level. Sometimes you're only able to say, okay, I actually need somebody that is on level 3, because where I am currently and the pace I'm running at, this is where it fits for me to be.
So I think that everybody who is recruiting obviously has a number of questions that they need to ask themselves before they begin the process. And one of those questions is around truly understanding what the purpose of that recruitment is. What is the purpose of that role, and what is it that you're wanting that person to do within your organization?
Yeah.
Linked to that is, in hiring that person, how is it that you want them to contribute towards achieving your business's strategic goals? Mm. And what is it that you actually want to achieve?
Yeah.
Because for some people, they don't need to have a high performing organization.
Mm.
You know, for some people, they don't need to be, you know, highly productive, you know, best of the best. They're totally okay and comfortable with being average. And that's okay too, if that's what serves you and your organization, right? But there's a number of other things that kind of come into play for me. And the first one is around knowing that when you hire people, you have a responsibility.
Yeah.
As an employer, to develop them. So even if you do hire people who are not high performers, you still have a responsibility to contribute towards their development in some way.
Yeah.
So you don't get to just hire people and let them stay in the same role doing the same thing for 10 years and nothing ever changes. They don't grow. If they leave the organization, they haven't really learned anything.
Yeah.
Or, you know, improved in terms of their performance. That's very irresponsible leadership. But I think that for people who do want to have organizations that are high performing and highly productive and all of these things, then obviously you do need to recruit with that in mind. But culture does play a role, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we have to get to a point also where we start acknowledging the fact that, yes, you can look at somebody's CV and say, okay, they excel at these certain things. They look like, you know, they're pretty slick in what they do, and, you know, they seem like a high performer. But, you know, you can't look at that in isolation. You're also going to be able to meet with the person, get a feeling for their personality, what type of environment you believe that they would thrive in, what they're actually passionate about. Because sometimes somebody might be a high-performing, number-crunching, highly productive person, but they might actually clash with your culture and your organization, and then both of you are unhappy. So there's definitely a lot more filtering that needs to come into play when determining who the right fit for an organization would be, and a lot of questions that organizations need to ask themselves before they bring people on board. Because there's a lot of people who might, you know, get a job and be excited about it, but once they get in, it's not actually what they want, but now they're here, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Because I struggled a lot in terms of just identifying whether this is a mentorship or have I actually hired somebody that is able to do the job, and what level am I comfortable with taking this person from, and what can I invest? Because now you give a person an assignment or a job project and you constantly need to be involved, whereas literally you hired somebody to take a certain amount of weight off you, you know? So those were the struggles for me in terms of, how do I approach this? How do I go forth making sure that I'm not constantly hiring from a point of, okay, she doesn't have this or he doesn't have this, but that's okay. Let me just guide them through that, where guiding turns into like an entire session constantly. And that takes up more, and you actually end up actually doing the very work that you hired the person to take the load off from.
Yeah, I think that's, it's a very important point to mention, because the reality is that when you do make those decisions from a place of trauma, you actually set yourself back, and you actually are continuing the cycle, because at some point that experience is going to then evolve into you going resentful towards that person.
Yeah.
And then that then changes the dynamic within the workplace, and then it starts creating a very negative energy. And then you've been quadruple times unhappy, and then they're unhappy, and then, you know, so it doesn't help anyone to make decisions on that basis. I think, you know, there's an opportunity to find a way to feed both sides, right? So for instance, you hire somebody on the basis of their ability to do the job without needing too much of your guidance, right? But then you might say there's a part of you that wants to give back because of your experience. You want to help someone else.
Yeah.
And that's different. So then maybe you might say, I'm going to hire for these purposes and get somebody who can get the job done. But to help others who may have been through the same thing, I'll maybe have a mentorship program every year. And I'll get one person that I know needs more time, more guidance. But at least I know that there are other people in the team who can guide them as well, who have the experience.
Okay, that's very good. Who do you speak for? In terms of...
Who do I speak for?
Yeah. In terms of employers, workers, employees, like I found that obviously I think when we have private conversations, and especially for those that follow you, because we workers in our own capacity, and you read your book, you know, engage in terms of your interviews, there's definitely a worker pro voice, but I didn't just want to assume that this is like all you speak for, or whoever you speak for. Like, who do you think you represent the most in terms of the projects that you lead, the engagements that you have?
Okay, so I think of it this way. My voice is to advocate for people within the workplace who are disadvantaged.